Fire! Fire! Fire!
So shouted a prominent public speaker in a crowded public place in a debate concerning that most foundational of rights, freedom of speech. There was, as you might already have guessed, no such imminent conflagration on that particular day. The free speaker was referring instead to the, quote, fatuous verdict of the greatly overpraised Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, as rendered in a case that is as often and confidently quoted as it is misunderstood. Allow us, once and for all, to foil this lame canard. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. This is the best in Bitcoin made audible, and I am your host. I am your narrator. I am your captain on this journey today. I'm the guy who's read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we've got a fun little piece, and I talk about this in the guy's take, and I wish I could remember or could find. I actually did go hunting. Couldn't find it anywhere. Who recommended this piece to me? I will thank you in advance, even though I do not remember who you were. If you're in the Audionauts, awesome, let me know. Just shoot me a message. But I do not know Joel Bowman, who is our author today. And I am not subscribed to this Substack or anything. This is just something that someone suggested to me, and I read through, and it was really good. It's written really well. It's a fun read. It's also not very long. And it is a cool little piece of history. A cool little piece of history about the fight for free speech. And more specifically, about where the excuse of, well, you're not allowed to yell fire in a crowded theater, came from. And how its very origins were literally used for the exact opposite of the proclaimed purpose. And that's just so on character for government and politicians in general, that it's a little bit funny. It really kind of is. But we are going to get into it today. This is a really fun one, and thank you to whoever recommended it. Really quick, I just want to say thank you to our sponsors for today. We've got the Fold card that gives us sats back on everything in our life. You got to check it out. The link is in the show notes. And then you got the CoinKite. So many, the best in Bitcoin hardware devices and security devices. And just like cool little cyberpunk things. They've got it all. And a 9% discount with code Bitcoin Audible. And then lastly, Swan Bitcoin, the best onboarding service out there. And they have an IRA, Swan IRA, Roth or traditional. If you still have a retirement in the fiat world, you have got to get real Bitcoin in your retirement. You got to check this out. Link is in the show notes. So check them out. With that, let's get into today's read, and it's titled, Fire, Fire, Fire! The theater was crowded, and the danger clear and present. Written by Joel Bowman. Joel Bowman checking in today from Houston, Texas. Welcome to another Sunday session, dear reader, when we gather at the local virtual watering hole to puzzle over the myriad dilemmas confronting mankind. Earnestly do we pray for wisdom, humbly do we admit our shortcomings, and eventually do we reach for another glass of wine. We're here in the Lone Star State all month visiting with friends and family. It's cookout season, as Texans well know, but at over 100 degrees we will wait until the sun goes down before firing up the grill. Even Australians have their limits. For as long as man has gathered around flames, has he joked, bickered, lied, regaled, argued, and generally threshed out the problems of the day. Which crops to grow and what animals to hunt, when to reap and when to sow, when to invade and with whom to trade, to go far or alone, to set sail or set up camp, to fight or take flight, to buy or sell, or to tell them all to go to hell. Most important decisions, whether made collectively or at the individual level, involve some back and forth. Whether wrestling with your conscience or arguing with your mother-in-law, it's the open exchange of ideas that helps us get to where we're going, wherever that may be. And yet, no less than twice this past week, your editor heard fall from the lips of angels that most hackneyed trope, shouting fire in a crowded theater, as a knee-jerk defense for censorship of free expression. In our brief experience, those who invoke that hoary old cry are typically shocked to learn the origins of the phrase, and the twisted irony of its present-day application. And so, in today's feature essay, we hope to bring a little less heat and a little more light to the subject at hand. Clear and Present Danger by Joel Bowman.
Fire! Fire! Fire!
So shouted a prominent public speaker in a crowded public place in a debate concerning that most foundational of rights, freedom of speech. There was, as you might already have guessed, no such imminent conflagration on that particular day. The free speaker was referring instead to the, quote, fatuous verdict of the greatly overpraised Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, as rendered in a case that is as often and confidently quoted as it is misunderstood. Allow us, once and for all, to foil this lame canard. The case in question, that of Schenck versus the United States in 1919, was decided in favor of the state. That much is widely known. Here is the key phrase from Justice Holmes' verdict. Quote, "The most stringent protection of free speech would not protect a man falsely shouting fire in a theater and causing a panic." The defendants in the case, a group of Yiddish-speaking German-American pacifists, including one Charles Schenck, were tried under President Woodrow Wilson's 1917 Espionage Act for circulating a pamphlet urging draft-age Americans to resist induction. The incriminating pamphlet, which you can and really should read in full here, link provided, carried the headline, "Long live the Constitution of the United States. Wake up, America. Your liberties are in danger." All told, 15,000 copies of the one-page front and back publication were circulated, in which was quoted Section 1 of the 13th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America. Quote, "Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction." Schenck argued that the draft amounted to involuntary servitude as, quote, "a conscripted citizen is forced to surrender his right as a citizen and become a subject." A dubious standard. In rendering his verdict, Holmes held that it was the responsibility of Congress to decide when and under what circumstances a citizen may assert his constitutionally guaranteed right to free speech. Wrote Holmes, quote, "Words which, ordinarily and in many places, would be within the freedom of speech protected by the First Amendment may become subject to prohibition when of such a nature and used in such circumstances as to create a clear and present danger that they will bring about the substantive evils which Congress has a right to prevent. The character of every act depends upon the circumstances in which it is done." Thus was the dubious, clear and present danger standard born. Holmes himself sought to redefine the standard later that same year when he dissented in Abrams versus the United States, 1919. The justice felt that the court was not applying his own standard appropriately and openly questioned the government's ability to limit free speech. But by then, the slippery standard was off and racing. It would fly for another half century. All told, varying versions of Holmes' clear and present danger standard were applied all the way up until 1969, when the court established stronger protections for speech in the landmark case Brandenburg versus Ohio, which held that, quote, "the constitutional guarantees of free speech and free press do not permit a state to forbid or prescribe advocacy of the use of force or of law violation, except where such advocacy is directed to inciting or producing imminent lawless action." Quote, "selective services." But let us return to the case of Mr. Schenck et al. For a moment. as it happened, there really was a fire, now known as World War I, and the blazing theater, that of the Continental Battlefield, circa 1917 to 1919, was very much a crowded one indeed. So was it full, one might add, with all manner of substantive evils. Moreover, it was crowded with young men who were shipped there against their will, conscripted under President Wilson's 1917 Selective Services Act, with the expressed purpose of facing a clear and present danger. The only thing in danger as a result of Schenck's circulation was the efforts of President Wilson, along with his sociopathic propaganda sidekick, Eddie Bernays, to drag an otherwise war-weary America onto a foreign battlefield, a crowded theater in which 116,516 Americans ultimately laid down their lives. The irony of the verdict notwithstanding, the, quote, fire in a crowded theater phrase has come to provide a convenient shield for anyone seeking to shutter speech they find hateful, repugnant, or even merely disagreeable. In recent years, the amount of information that has been labeled mis- or disinformation, thereby constituting a clear and present danger to society, to democracy, to our way of life, continues to broaden and expand. Claims made during the panic of the pandemic regarding lockdowns, vaccine efficacy, and even the potential origins of the virus itself, many of which have since proven true, or at the very least worthy of further investigation, saw professors banished, scientists ridiculed, and journalists publicly excoriated in what can only be described as modern-day witch hunts. And yet it was those pointing the finger who were often found to be the ones having peddled the biggest mistruths of all. Recall 2 weeks to flatten the curve, and if you get the vaccine, you're not going to get sick. You're not going to pass it on. Remember Joe Rogan's horse dewormer? And Francis Collins with his not-so-scientific, we need to orchestrate an epic public takedown of fringe scientists from Stanford, Oxford, and Harvard University. Absolute relativists. And yet, in an age where hurt feelings trump inconvenient facts, where victimhood, whether actual or merely claimed, is worn with gushing pride, and where the sensorial impulse marches lockstep with the will of the wounded, the very phrase free speech has itself been repurposed as a glowing signifier of extremism. Indeed, proponents of open dialogue and the unfettered exchange of ideas are often referred to sneeringly as absolutists. Some, like Tesla CEO and unabashed Twitter tease Elon Musk, even claim the moniker for themselves. But the designation is as redundant as it is misleading. One is only a free speech, quote, absolutist, in the sense that one might be said to be a gravity absolutist or an abolition absolutist. Either one observes the demonstrable effects of the former, i.e. it sucks, or one does not, usually to his impactful detriment. Likewise, one either accepts the inalienable rights of one and all to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, or one does not. Ultimately, the position of the quasi-abolitionist is as untenable as that of the gravity relativist. To suggest that freedom of speech be abridged, even in the case of clear and present danger, is to shackle both speakers and listeners to the whim of an interpretive body, a mythical, omniscient majority, prey to hubris and bound to error, to whom it falls to decide what, in fact, satisfies that particular threshold. And it is at precisely that moment when speech is no longer free, but conditional. Such a reinterpretation of a basic right, once enshrined in the very First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, no less, represents a daring departure from long-recognized notions of natural law. One needs only to imagine the power of censorship in their political opponents' hands to envision the chilling effect of a one-party narrative. And if free speech opponents get their way, no such imagination will be required. All right, and that basically wraps up the article, but he does have a short little bit at the end that I'll read. Says, we're way over deadline today, dear reader, so we'll leave it there for now. But don't worry, we didn't forget the Fatal Conceits podcast, which I haven't checked out, with Byron King, which we promised you yesterday. Look out for that early in the next week. So I'll try to find this and get a link to it because it's probably something I'm going to put in my podcast list. So I'll shill that out for Joel here. Fatal Conceits sounds like a Fatal Conceits podcast. Sounds very interesting. It says, Bill will be back with his usual missives from tomorrow, too. In the meantime, enjoy what's left of your weekend. And as always, feel free to like, share, comment, and all that good stuff below. Until next time, cheers, Joel Bowman. Thank you for reading Bonner Private Research. This post is public, so feel free to share it. Free speakers and would-be censors alike. So it's cool. He makes a note there at the end to explicitly say, this is free to share and get out there. So, really quick, let's hit our sponsor, and then I want to do a guy's take on this piece. Today's episode is brought to you by Fold, and the Fold app and the Fold debit card that gets you sats back on everything in your life. I had a phenomenal day. So I usually do, you can get a 1% base, so you just every single thing you get 1% back, which is a freaking awesome deal when you think about it, that you don't have to worry about anything. But I am a fan of spinning the wheel and playing the probabilities and getting extra spins. And yesterday I had a phenomenal day. All the bills that came in, my groceries, everything. I got the lowest thing I got all day was 1.5%, and I got like 2% three times, I think it was, and 3% twice. And one thing that I am so excited about, so you can buy Bitcoin right in the app. No fees with the money on your Fold card. So what I've been doing every time I have change, or like let's say I have like, you know, $1,202.73 in my account. Well, I take that $2.03 at the end and I just buy Bitcoin with it, which is basically what they're going to have as an option, is that every single time you have a, this is on the roadmap for this year, is that if you spend $7.67, that you can round up and have that other 33% go automatically into Bitcoin. This is a feature I have been wanting forever, and I am so freaking stoked that Fold is going to do this finally. There is literally not an easier, lower barrier way, in my opinion, to be regularly stacking sats. I have 0.2, over 0.2 Bitcoin, 20 million sats that I have stacked just because I use the Fold card all the time. You have got to check it out. If you haven't, if you're in the US, you can use my code or my link specifically, bitcoinaudible.com/fold. It will take you there and you will get 20,000 sats for free. And, you know, getting 20,000 sats is, I mean, that's pretty good for nothing. That's a pretty good deal. Check them out. Link is right there in the show notes. All right. So I do not remember who, I do not have it saved. A lot of the times I do have it saved. If somebody specifically recommends an article to me and someone recommended this, I do not know Joel Bowman, but at some point in like Twitter conversations and talking about freedom of speech and all of these things, and maybe even somebody used the excuse of you can't say fire in a crowded theater or whatnot. Maybe somebody used that and that's what led them to send me this. But I know someone out there, one of you guys, sent it to me, and thank you very much because this was a great article and I did not know the history of this at all. And oh, the irony that the very case that is used as the absurd excuse of shouting fire in a crowded theater had nothing to do with someone shouting fire in a crowded theater, had nothing to do with putting people in harm's way over a lie, but in fact, just the opposite, the perfectly exact opposite. That it was used to imprison anti-war protesters who were calling out the government for enslaving its population and force them into harm's way over a lie. I am shocked. I am just shocked that this stupid excuse was actually used to excuse outright censorship and conscription into a war that people didn't want. Wow, that's so surprising and unlike the government. Now, here's the thing about this subjective and totally ambiguous reasoning of you can't yell fire in a crowded theater is that there is no reason for this to be criminal. It never needs to be a criminal issue. There are plenty of other reasons why you don't do that and why it would be very costly for someone to do that. There should never be a law around not saying something that you are already incentivized not to do and that you would be punished for doing. It presumes that someone can know the truth, that someone can just definitively know that there's definitely not a fire, that there's some source of truth, there's some overlord of all theaters that could know that that was simply not the case. And then you apply that to anything else, the idea that there is any legitimate source of truth and that the government would be anywhere near that source of truth, that would even be on the same playing field near the truth, is so absurd and so blind to everything that has happened in the last few years, if not the last century and a half, or for that matter, all of history of all government. The idea that there is some government-approved truth that cannot be questioned? I mean, just look at what happened over the last few years. We watched the U.S. government literally attempt to set up a Ministry of Truth, which, thank God, it actually failed, and of which did nothing but peddle lies and censor people who were sharing the truth. For any of the Democrat and Republican senators that are pushing this, the people in Congress, if you actually think that this is a good idea, if you actually think this is going to be used always in your favor, I would seriously recommend that you go check your pulse because you might be brain dead. But going back to just the excuse, the, you know, can't yell fire in a crowded theater, even in the worst case, the worst possible case of somebody doing this and innocent people being hurt in a panic, the outcome would be would absolutely be a civil issue. It would require insurance claims and lawsuits, but you cannot outlaw the speech itself. It does not need to be outlawed in order for that person to be liable for the damages. The only reason you would use that excuse is because it's the only one that even sounds like a hint of legitimacy, because in that situation, if they were doing that maliciously, they would be liable for damages in order to excuse censorship. But it's got nothing to do with preventing that from happening. It literally has never been used to prevent that from happening. The very first case of it was for exactly the opposite reason: to conscript people, to enslave the population, and to force them into harm's way so that they can go die for government lies. If you couldn't get a more perfect example of the absurdity and the lie of why censorship is being pushed. And when you constantly push laws, you literally destroy the human mind. You make everybody subservient and cowardly. When you just make everything against the law, everything that could be like bad or could be a mistake or like speaking mistruths or misinformation, that these things are illegal, you literally create people, you create a mentality where people are too scared to do anything. It's the same thing they do with like having to have a license for every stupid thing, a license to fish or a license to cut somebody's hair. All you do is you just trap people. You kill everything that's meaningful innovation and creativity. You literally suffocate the human spirit by making them afraid to move or do anything or make any choice without filling out a bunch of paperwork or asking permission from someone. They can't just go try something. They can't just go build something. It is literally a death certificate for the human soul. So is it any surprise that everybody's scared to stand up, to say anything, to even make a situation like slightly uncomfortable, to call out blatant and obvious lies, like stupid delusions, that we play along with these things as if we're doing somebody some good by just believing nonsense? There's another quote in this. It says, quote, "And yet, in an age where hurt feelings trump inconvenient facts, where victimhood, whether actual or merely claimed, is worn with gushing pride, and where the sensorial impulse marches lockstep with the will of the wounded, the very phrase free speech has itself been repurposed as a glowing signifier of extremism. Indeed, proponents of open dialogue and the unfettered exchange of ideas are often referred to sneeringly as absolutists. This is seriously crazy. The idea of even bringing up freedom of speech, one of the very first and most stringently and unambiguously defined rights in the Constitution of the United States and the Bill of Rights, has seriously been equated with extremism, with being a crazy conspiracy theorist. I mean, the gross dismissal, as if this is of no consequence, or even being concerned about it at all, makes you a weirdo, is such a demonstration of the absolute banality of evil. How could we be so astonishingly blind to the consequences of doing this? And we're not even talking about confusing gray area issues around speech today. We're literally talking about sharing opinions, about expert opinions, about pathologists and scientists sharing unapproved opinions based on data that they found, sharing real data that would make people vaccine hesitant. They're asking dangerous questions on Twitter. That's not a gray area. That's not even close to the stupid and already wrong,
well, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater.
It is so, the irony is just like so thick. Like you almost can't breathe. The level of unscientific cultishness of the people who say believe in science. Believe when that phrase, all that phrase means for those people is listen to what the people in charge tell you. That is what it means. I mean, even Neil deGrasse Tyson was talking about this, and I can't remember what the podcast was. It was like a clip that I saw, and I meant to go back and actually listen to the whole episode, but it was so funny. He didn't have an argument. He didn't have any argument whatsoever. He just kept saying, there's a system in place, and the people know what they're doing. Over and over again, it was like 15 different variations of an appeal to authority. It was nothing but fallacy after fallacy. Somebody else knows the answer. There's a textbook with the answer in it. There's a process to put it together. It's definitely right. Just listen to him. Just shut up and do what you're told. Stop asking questions. You're causing danger. Like, for someone who has a scientific mind, who's brilliant at explaining things, it was the most unscientific, mind-numbingly cultish tirade I had heard for at least that week. Man, if that doesn't show you how far we have fallen, I don't know what does. Bringing up free speech when we are talking about direct censorship of people on social media, where politicians literally send out emails and just say, this person is saying something that is going to make people not want to take vaccines. They're a Princeton professor. Yes, they're renowned in their field. Yes, please remove them from Twitter. Okay, yeah, we'll do that. And while at the exact same time, the mainstream apparatus just lies through their teeth as a rule. It's like they can't say the truth. It's like even if something true does happen, they have to figure out how to spin some bullshit into it. All they do is spin crap from the government to make it sound some particular way so that people will swallow it. And then when they're proven completely wrong, just utterly wrong, weeks or months later, it's like everybody's just supposed to forget about it. Like we're just not supposed to think about it anymore. They never retract. They never actually share the truth after the fact. They literally just cover it up. I mean, could you be more transparent about the fact that they just don't give a flying fuck about the truth or about helping anybody? That everything they do is about either appeasing the powers that be and twisting whatever garbage they are selling today into the most palatable propaganda, or sacrificing the population's explicit safety and health so that they don't have to apologize about the fact that they spread lies, that they spread nonsense, that they made an absolute mistake and just said, believe authority. I cannot fathom being that much of a narcissist and caring so little about other people. I mean, I guess those come in hand, but just the mixture of both of those, that to be so unempathetic and screaming about having empathy and to be so mind-numbingly like intolerant and be screaming about tolerance that people screaming about misinformation and lies are literally telling lies in a way that put people explicitly in danger and then avoid even having to feel bad about it or having to admit that you made a mistake or you said something that was untrue, that they would leave them in danger, that they would knowingly just let them live according to the crap that they tried to sell them and not let them know what the truth was. Just incredible. But you know, there's something a little reassuring about it as well, is that this fight isn't new. That this has been going on, this fight is as old as the country. And I think it doubly lends itself to the power of networks and information and monetary networks that cannot be controlled by these crazy people. That, as Gigi says, answers the questions of who can counterfeit the money and who can have access to the money, and gives a simple, universal, no one can counterfeit and everyone has access, no exceptions. It's not absolutism, it's common sense. And I am honestly more hopeful than ever that we will build the systems that simply make this kind of crap obsolete. And I think it's because we won't just lay down and let it happen. Because we are building it. It is being built right now. And just so you know, everyone out there is basically, with ChatGPT and some of these AI tools that are out there now, you're all developers. I'm a developer now, and I'm trying to be very serious about it. I can be, at least. Doesn't mean I'm going to write good code, and it doesn't mean that, you know, it's a particularly easy task, but the scope of what is possible with tools like this is so much greater now. And I think it's important that we be the early adopters of it, just like we've been the early adopters of freedom money, of free and open encrypted networks, of peer-to-peer networks like Keet and Hole Punch, and all of these things that Bitcoiners have jumped on. I think we need to do the same thing with these AI tools, which I still hate calling it AI because it's not AI. It's you know, machine learning, you know, statistics with flair, basically. But regardless, because everybody knows it is AI, that we need to use these tools as quickly as possible and as aggressively as possible to build the future that we hope to achieve, that we want to see. So anyway, that's a little bit of a tangent, but I don't know. I just think free speech is, I mean, it's the issue of the age, and it's clearly been an issue for 120 odd years. And rather than requiring some justice to be able to determine the answer, or some group of narcissistic politicians or a senile president waiting for them to defend our freedom, to care about freedom of speech, when they literally speak of us as if us caring about free speech is a pejorative, that this is something to ridicule us about. Cypherpunks build the systems that make those people powerless, because that is exactly what they deserve, to be embarrassingly inconsequential. We should not simply get around them. We should make a mockery of things like the Restrict Act. Anyway, I will close this out here. This is all the time I had. I'm a little over today. But I hope you guys enjoyed that one. And again, thank you to whoever it was who sent me that, because that's a cool little piece of history that I did not know. And it's good to know. It's a fun little article too. Joel Bowman has a really interesting writing style. It was very entertaining to read. So it's much appreciated. I'm probably actually going to subscribe to his thing and fill up my mailbox with another, you know, 1,000 odd reads that I can't articles and Substacks that I can't actually get to all of them. but it will be nice to have. Maybe I'll stumble upon something that catches my eye, and we'll be reading Joel Bowman again on the show at some point. We'll see. But with that, thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you to the Audionauts for supporting me and the show and hanging out with me in the Telegram group and the Keat group. Just being longtime listeners and being part of Bitcoin Audible, it's crazy. You know, like there was a point in the show where I was getting a little bit burnout and it wasn't making any money, and which, you know, wasn't that big of a deal. But, you know, for the amount of work that it is, like it's a full-time job and I still don't get an episode out every day. There were a couple of different points actually where I was starting to get a little bit burnout and I didn't know if I wanted to continue it. And without a doubt, a major reason why I just kept publishing and kept coming back to it, I mean, aside the fact that I love Bitcoin and I have a hard time, this is still what I spend my time doing. Aside from that, was just having the gang of Audionauts. Like they were the first people, you guys were the first ones that actually supported the show. Like I was getting in like $50 a month or $100 a month or whatever it was. And you guys were hanging out with me in a Telegram group, and basically I didn't want to let you guys down. You know, it's really easy to forget that a lot of people listen to the show when I'm just sitting here talking into my computer. And you know, I see some statistics in my hosting app or whatever the hell it is. And it's good to have people right in front of me to hang out with, ask questions, and, you know, share the things they like about the show and the things that I was totally wrong about and the stupid crap I said. I really, really appreciate it. I really do. Thank you guys. And also thank you to the sponsors for keeping me fed and making it actually profitable to keep this up so that I can do this full time. It's an amazing thing. And to just support and to shill companies that I love. Like, holy crap, I've used Swan since forever. I shill Fold throughout the day to everybody whenever I go somewhere. And I do, I've got the lady at Clean Juice. She did my spin wheel today. I actually had to get new cards for my old boring bank. And the only thing that I do with them now is transfer to the Fold. So they don't see like any consumer charges at all. It's just transfers. What's hilarious is I was sitting in the bank or whatever, and I just like went on for like 10 minutes about how, oh yeah, I just use the Fold card because I get sats back. I get Bitcoin on everything that I do. I literally just told her about how like I have Bitcoin in my life and how, you know, it's just like, well, just, I don't have any fees and I get sats back on my debit card and I use Bitcoin and Bitcoin can transfer to any country instantly without any fees. So I don't know how the banking model is going to stick around for any length of time. But it was pretty funny. She was actually interested. It was a very friendly conversation. But anyway, also CoinKite I've got a special project. Just episodes of the show, but a project that I am doing with CoinKite that I will be doing very soon. I'll be starting very soon, maybe even tomorrow, actually, if I go ahead and get on it. We're going to be reading something that will be only sponsored by CoinKite. And it was something that I spoke with a couple of people who work there and they thought it was a really good idea. And it's some works that they really enjoy. And it is something that I hadn't actually thought about that would be fantastic to do on the show. So I've been reading through them and I've just forgotten how great it is. Because of that, we will have that coming soon. So keep an ear out. We got some fun stuff there. And don't forget to check out our sponsors. Links will be in the show notes. Discount codes for CoinKite and some free sats from Fold. Check them out. All right, guys, I'm done. Thank you so much for listening. I will catch you on the next episode of Bitcoin Audible. And until then, everybody, take it easy, guys. Coercion is evil precisely because it eliminates an individual as a thinking and valuing person and makes him a bare tool in the achievement of the ends of another. F.A. Hayek.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.